Are you struggling to believe that there is a purpose for your life? That after all you've been through, seen, or done, that there is a chance you'll ever find peace and wholeness again? Welcome to Love and Be Loved. This podcast explores what matters to us the most. Overcoming adversity, success stories on relationships with God, ourselves, and others. Now here is your host, Lena Cibula.
Welcome guys to Love and Be Loved platform. And you can listen to this podcast episode on iTunes, Spotify, and in general on any platform that you prefer to listen to. But plus, after all this time, this episode will be on YouTube as well. And if you, like me, like to watch episodes instead of listening, this is great opportunity to meet amazing people face-to-face, per se. So today we have an amazing guest and with inspiring story, Trent Brook. Trent will be published author, came to November, December this year, 2023. He has written anthology piece for Breaking the Silence, Voices of Survivors collection, and that's how we met, being part of the Breaking Silence assignment. And he's also a three-time cancer survivor and overcoming. Actually, you don't use the word survivor, I noticed. So it's That's very right. important for me too, because words are very important, especially like when we're talking about something very specific like that. And I'm so grateful that you're here, Trent. Welcome to Love and Be Loved podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. You know, we met through the Breaking the Silence thing with Michelle, and you know, I've heard your story as well, and you know, it's a pleasure to be here today. Thank you.
That's awesome. And for you guys who listening or watching this, you know, my platform is actually, I talk a lot about human trafficking or domestic violence, but when I created this platform, it was designed to inspire, encourage, and to give hope. And I do believe Trent is perfect person for this episode and for this platform, because I do believe you fit right in with your story. So without further ado, please share a little bit about yourself and where your journey begins.
Okay, sure. Well, I'm originally from North Louisiana, and so I consider myself a little bit redneck with a bit of Southern charm in there. Yeah, I graduated from Louisiana Tech University. A lot of my family went there, and so I have a lot of family tradition. I graduated with a master's degree and a IT information technology degree, so kind of in the computer area. When I graduated, I traveled all around the country and installing large computer systems for large corporations around the country, and so I love the travel and I love doing that. And it was a tough job. It was a lot of stress, and I needed a break. So I decided I'd work on some of my own personal goals, which was I moved to Spain, and I taught English for a while, kind of as a tutor kind of situation. And I attempted to learn Spanish, and that was pretty much a disaster. And so you, with English being what, your third language?
Yes.
I can't believe it. I can't believe it. I can't believe all the work and that you had to put in. It's quite a feat to do that. And then, you know, on my holidays, on Christmas in the summertime, when I had some breaks, I would go and travel Europe. And so by then the travel bug had gotten me, right? And so then I wanted to go see the rest of the world. So I got back into IT and I started traveling around doing IT stuff around the world. And I ended up settling in New Zealand. Beautiful country, awesome people. I got back into the IT game, and about 4 or 5 years in, I've always been into working out and fitness and things like that. And I had gotten into kind of doing some kickboxing and boxing stuff, just training. I would never compete. I do not want to hurt my face. Okay. Right. And so I met these American guys that had traveled down for some boxing matches. And so I kind of got to know them. They were there for a couple of months, kind of training and getting ready for their matches. And I got to know them pretty well. I thought it was cool that, you know, they were boxers and I was training with them. And their manager was there as well. And I took some training with him. I got to know him. We kind of got to be friends. Well, one of the things that he does in addition to boxing training is He owns a side kettle corn business, like farmer market, outdoor festival kettle corn in his home state of Washington. And so, talking about that, he said, "Hey, look, do they have kettle corn in New Zealand?" And I looked around, I went to the markets, I went to the supermarkets, they didn't have it. Well, everybody knows what kettle corn is in America. They didn't know what it was in New Zealand, and I thought, this is going to be a winner, it's going to work. And so we started a business on the weekends, and this thing is about 13 years into it. And we have about 15 staff, two factories, four popcorn lines. I'm the second biggest popcorn manufacturer in New Zealand. We're all over New Zealand, parts of Asia, the islands, parts of
Wow.
the Middle East, et cetera. And so, that's kind of my background and my history, in my career. Well, back in 2019, I'm in the factory. I start limping around. And I went to several doctors, and all of them kept telling me the same thing, that I had torn one of my butt muscles. But it wasn't getting better. It just kept getting worse. And it just, as time progressed, it was getting worse and worse. This is over 2 or 3 months. Had to go into the hospital and have some blood work done for something not related. And the hematologist just said, "Hey, can you get an x-ray today?" And I was just kind of like, "Well, no." And she said, "Hey, I think something serious is going on." And I was like, "Okay, if you'd like me to, I'll do it." Well, right, I'm glad we got an x-ray, because I got the call that changed my life, as the cliche goes. And that was that I was diagnosed with aggressive, extensive hip bone cancer.
Wow.
And and so I had about a quarter inch of my hip, of my pelvis bone holding my leg on. Every step that I took, I was in danger of breaking my leg. She told me on the phone right then, if I broke my leg, there would be no options but to cut the leg off, right?
Wow.
So straight into the hospital, right? Straight to the hospital, straight to the emergency room. Check me in, and it's public health care there. And so if you've dealt with anything in the government, in any government, really, in any work, any country, it's slow and the service is average. And this is the same way. And so it was a series of me going in and out of the hospital over 6 months. And about the third, see, what would happen is they would do the x-rays and they would try to make an implant. Well, it takes a couple months to make the implant. By the time they're ready to do the surgery,
Yeah,
the
you need a
cancer,
new one already.
that's exactly right. Yeah. And so the third time through, the doctor came in and he just said, "Look, it's too far. We got to cut the leg off." And I lost it, right? I mean, everything I'd been through already, I lost it. And so my parents were actually on the phone with me. I'd gotten to the point where, in New Zealand, they very much encourage you to have a support person with you, in situations like this when you go to appointments. Well, my support person was my parents on the phone, right? And so my dad just stepped in and he said, "Look, you can't do it. You've taken us down this road for 6 months. You don't know my son like I do. He's a fighter. He's not a quitter. You give him a chance, he will make this work. He's like no one you've ever met."
That's
And so
amazing. Give me goosebumps. That's a good support
right.
person to have. That's amazing.
I mean, yeah, I mean, some of those things I've never even heard my dad say before,
Oh, beautiful.
and so the doctor went away. He said, and he came back and he said, "Look, we'll leave the leg, but I can't guarantee anything. I can't guarantee how it's going to work, how it's going to function, or anything. It's probably just going to be more like a stump, and it will definitely be shorter because we're going to have to remove so much of the bone and the tissue and everything that it's going to naturally just be shorter than the other." Okay. I'm thinking, leave the leg, I'll make it work, right? So we had the surgery. My folks came down. We had the surgery, and the surgery went well. It was a success. They got the cancer, but the problem was that it was infected. And so over the next 4 months, I had surgeries to try to remove the infection and improve the situation, and it just never happened. I was on antibiotics. I mean, we did everything. But every day, I was getting better. I wasn't allowed out of bed for 60 days. I couldn't even roll myself over. I had to have the nurses come over to roll me over and help me back. You can imagine trying to sit on a bedpan after they've cut you open from your belly button to your spine and halfway down your leg. They basically cut the leg off and sewed it back on. Okay. And so the result of that was this. I like to use some props and some images to help people kind of understand, because talking about it is a little different than seeing it. So you can see in this picture that this is a normal hip area. Well, it's gone. And what they did is they put a little wire right here, and this is the leg bone to keep it from moving upward. Pretty good idea, right? Okay. And so the thing was, they removed just to, just to give you an idea. So they removed like my gluteus maximus, my gluteus minimus, medius. All I had was just like a little bit of that. And the doctor had a joke, and what he used to say is, well, basically, everything you do now, you'll pretty much half-assed everything.
Oh,
And so,
no.
I mean, that's kind of, to put a little bit of a light spin on the situation.
Yes.
But hey, you know what? The thing is, you did a good job, and we still had the leg. So I got out of the hospital, and I'm back to work. I never quit working, actually. If you own your own business, you do your own thing, it doesn't matter what you do. I mean, I'm the owner. I make a lot of decisions. I'm very involved. It's my business. I couldn't do anything about it. So I actually work from my hospital bed. You do what you got to do, right? And
Wow.
so, right. So we got out. I thought everything was going to be good. We're back at work, trying to get back in the routine. I'm so thankful to be back at work. Well, my next scan comes up, and it shows that I have a tumor in my pancreas and my lung. Okay.
Oh my goodness, from one to another, and it's not even related. How that shock? Like, I want to ask before we move on, because I want to ask the same question when you received that first diagnosis on the phone. Like, how did it feel? Like, what did you feel in that moment, thinking like, I'm the owner of the company, people depend on me, this is my life, this is cannot be happening to me. Like, what was that first reaction, and what steps did you take? Did you right away call your parents? Like, what, like, support group, or what did you do in that moment, just in case somebody listening and they just got that phone call? Because it's terrible that it's pretty common phone call that you have a cancer in these days. So I want you to speak into that moment when it's like fear and panic and disbelief and why me, why this is happening, why right now? Like, what was that like?
I mean, it's I was in shock, right? I was in shock, and then and then on the phone, and I happened it happened to be one of my managers was in the car with me, and we were going to lunch when I
Wow.
got the phone call. And I just answered the phone because I knew it was the hospital, but I didn't know it was her. So I was t it was totally unexpected. I didn't think there was anything wrong, because I'd already had three doctors tell me you've torn your butt muscle, and I just had the x-ray to just do it because she asked me to, and I just thought, well, whatever. And so it was shock. And I'll tell you what, this was something that I wrestled with for a long time afterwards. Immediately, my mind went to the worst case scenario, which was I'm going to die from this. And the reason that I thought I was is because about 6 months before that, my brother's best friend, and one of my good friends, one of my fraternity brothers in college, my aunt and uncle's godson, okay, a close friend, a very close friend, he had had about a 2 year battle with cancer, and he died. He died from it. And he left his wife and his two kids at the age of 38. And I immediately thought, I'm going to die just like him, right? And so I was upset. I'm crying. I mean, I think that's naturally what happens, right? You're in shock. You're upset. You don't know what to do. I've never been sick before. They're like, you need to get to the hospital immediately, right now. Do not, every step you take, you could break your leg. When you get to the door of the emergency room, sit down in a wheelchair.
Oh my goodness.
I'm just blown away, right? So I call my parents, right? My mom's not around, but my dad's home. And, my dad just told me, he said, look, whatever it is, we're going to beat this. We're going to win. And, you have to remember, Trent, you are not Chris. That was Chris in Chris's life. You are
That's
not
a
Chris.
good reminder not to compare ourselves because we have lots of really stories that didn't end it well, but we have lots of overcomer stories like yours. So that's a good advice to concentrate on the positive because still you didn't know what's ahead. So thinking about the end in a negative way would not help, not your psyche, not your emotion, and the panic and fear escalates when we're spiraling down and we cannot think straight. So what advice would you give to a person who just got that phone call and to the person who is family member or friend got that phone call or that
What I would
news?
probably say is sit down, take some deep breaths, and try to calm yourself down, right? Because this is what happens, I think, with a lot of people, right? And especially in the world today, with it being so negative, and it's just the news is negative. There's so many terrible things that happen. It's just, I think people kind of have been programmed now to go that way. And I would sit down, I would take some deep breaths, I would just try to absorb the information. And I think the best thing to do is you need to call somebody. You need to talk to somebody as quickly as you can that is your support group. And your parents, for me, I'm close to my parents still. I have some really good friends as well. I mean, we all do. We all have a few of those people. You need to call them, and you need to get involved, because a lot of people are tough, and there's a lot of independent people out there. You're the one that's going to have to make the ultimate decisions in that situation, but you can't do this by yourself. You need support. You need a lot of things, right? I go to counseling now still.
Well,
That's
it's a
something.
trauma. One way or another,
Oh,
it's a trauma.
yeah, absolutely it is, and there's so many things that I think that are tools that are out there now that help people. And
Like what kind of tools can you name few? So you said
I
parents
mean,
like support one, counseling, what else they can do
yeah,
or we can do?
absolutely. For me, I'm involved in the local cancer group community. I'm involved as a person that gets to utilize the resources. For example, I go to yoga with people that have had cancer or recovered from cancer. So I got, I have yoga to go to. I have the counseling, and I go to a counselor that specifically specializes with cancer and people, that have had cancer and related to that. I think meditate. So I think you need to be involved in a group of whatever similar that is, to let you know that there's people out there that are in the same situation as you. And you should realize, this is bad,
But you're
but
not alone. I
that's
think
right.
this biggest lie sometimes we give into, especially when something bad happening, that you're alone. You know, this is me, why me? And that can really trigger so many bad feelings, like and resentment and sadness and hate and upset with I don't know what, maybe with God, with people, with the world, with I don't know, your companies, families. But when you realize this is just happening, it's not because of you, like, or something, it just happened. And I think what you said first, just breathe and try to absorb the information, but kind of being like bystander to actually, it's very hard to rationalize in that moment.
Sure.
But as long as like staying calm and then connect with people who love you and support you. And honestly, guys, if you believe you're alone and you don't have an army to support you, a wonderful father like Trent does, you still have one person who can speak life into you. So think about it and choose that person. Like they're still around you, people who loves you. You just need to reach out and share and be open with them, and you will see how much they actually care and love for you. I do believe, because I came from very from discord and broken family, and I still had one person who backed me up and walked with me through life. So is you. You're gonna be okay. You just need to reach out and be honest and open. And this is amazing advice to be with other people too, because what is community does, especially when we struggle with this similar pain, you know, I relate to that. For example, if I am a survivor of human trafficking and drug abuse, if I go to, I don't know, some club or some organization who talking about, you know, some wonderful dance competitions, and I'm like, it does not relate to me anyhow. And they say, yeah, I understand you. I'm like, yeah, by taking Tylenol, it's not the drug abuse. So you know what I mean? But then I go to Alcoholic and Drug Addict Anonymous and we're talking. I know these people know what I'm talking about. So that's why I go to the cancer survivor, somebody who already went through, and especially like, oh, I'm having goosebumps again from someone who already overcome this adversity and this pain and feeling. So they already can help you. Like right now, you're giving us advice. What can you do? Because you felt it, it happens, you went through, and then there's people who gonna be right getting in the middle of it, in the beginning of it. Maybe somebody lost someone, but maybe somebody survive and overcome and have those stories of their relatives. And people are amazing when they, like when they, I'm saying they, I'm us, you know, we should talk about us. Both of us are overcomers, you know. So for us to share our stories, that's the point. That's why we are here. That's why we're writing that book. And that's why we're doing these interviews, because we want all of you to know, no matter what you went through, no matter where you are, it is possible. But like, human beings are so resilient and we can overcome. You know what? Sometimes we don't have this wonderful ending of the stories, but we can do the best we can with what we have, and it can be better if you know that you're not alone. Lots of people go through the same thing, and you can be part of the community when the people are gonna love you and support you. And honestly, creating the awareness, I think it's very important. So I'm thankful to you, Trent, for you sharing this today and openly talking about the feelings, about your emotion, and the fact that you're a gentleman and you said, I totally broke down and I cried, because that's what we do. Our emotional, like we are falling apart. Our emotional state cannot handle this kind of news and be okay. So the trauma already going to be happening. But then on top of the trauma, you just overcome this the leg and hip, this like problems and that, okay, now I'm good. Now I come back to work. This is another like bizarre thing about you. I think you are amazing working through this kind of situation and still be accountable and support the people who are relying on you and your business. It's just very inspiring and admirable.
Yeah, so
I'm really, really impressed, but not like in this like, oh, like I'm really like humanly impressed that you're able to do this too big, like overcome this big situation and
Sure.
overcoming your pains and struggles with your work. But now you're getting second phone call that not relating to your leg and hip and like at all. And what happened then?
Well, that one, I had a different, my reaction was much different. I was frustrated
Wow.
and
Oh,
angry.
so now you were angry.
Yeah.
Why?
Because why is this happening to me? I thought this was over. Right? And the way that they told me, it was just, well, I don't know how you tell somebody, right?
Yes.
But I had gone in to the hospital for some stuff, for some issues with the leg and the infection. And they were running some tests, and we had to put a tube in for a drain and all this kind of stuff. And on the way out, when
Oh
I
my
was leaving,
gosh.
it was like, hey, by the way, I need to tell you. And it was a junior doctor. I didn't even know. I had no relationship with. And you know, the deal is, okay, telling you have cancer, but telling you have pancreas cancer, that's a different level, man. That's telling you
Wow.
that you're gonna die,
Oh
okay?
my
Because
gosh.
pancreatic cancer is less than 5% make it with treatment,
Oh my
okay?
goodness.
So basically, he told me, by the way, on the way out the door, you're gonna die.
My gosh, it's like probably hit you like a truck. What?
I was actually already frustrated and angry at frustrated from the day and how everything had gone with everything, with trying to put the drain in and all the stuff, and it was a mess already. And then at the end of the day, he told me, and I was already kind of
Oh my
frustrated with
gosh.
everything, and I was just like, yeah, okay, whatever. And I just left, right? And but that's rough, man. Not one, but two cancers, right? In two different places. And they give you the death sentence, right?
Oh my
Because that's what
goodness.
pancreas cancer is, a death sentence. Okay. So, all right. Well, what are we going to do? I mean, I'm thankful that we've caught it early enough. What are we going to do about it, right? So, the pancreas is definitely the worst of the two. So we're going to tackle that first. And so I see the surgeon, and he said, hey, look, the good news is that the tumor is at the bottom of your pancreas and not the top. But at the top end is where all the tubes and everything are connected. Okay. At the bottom, it's
You
not
mean
a,
to other organs?
it connects to, it's kind of attached to your spleen,
Okay.
but it's better to have it at the bottom than the top. 'Cause at the top, that's a mess. 'Cause then,
Okay.
tubes and everything, they go to the other parts of your body. So, we decided, okay, surgery is the best thing to do. Okay, well, and this is about the time COVID hits, right? In between the, going to the doctor and then getting the surgery, COVID hits. And in New Zealand, we are locked down like caged animals.
Oh
Okay.
my goodness.
It is horrific. I mean, it is so isolating. I cannot tell you, the mental health issues that they're still dealing with.
Well,
I mean, it was
absolutely.
all they already had issues down there with mental health, right? It just
Yeah, it's
blew
hit us
up.
hard, honestly. And knowing that you have to be in and out of hospital, how that work out?
Well, no visitors. So it's, and so the pancreas surgery was fine. Out of all the surgeries I've had, it was actually the best one.
You
But
have
it's
to do the
really
best one, like in the quotation, because that relating to the surgery.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you were alone completely and going to surgery and being, how long you have to stay in the hospital after?
Well, for the pancreas thing, it was only about
Okay.
4 days.
Okay.
So, that was good. The issues were that I had a drain. I had a drain that was coming at me with the bag that kind of like people would think of like a colostomy bag, more or less. I mean, so I have fluid, that's coming out because, your pancreas is kind of like that. They cut the thing in half. So, obviously it's wounded and it's going to take some time to heal. So, okay. So that drug on for several months. It was supposed to be a couple weeks. It was two and a half months that I had this bag and everything, and it didn't fit right, and it would get loose, and then it would fall off, and it wasn't attached to my skin properly, and it was just a mess, right? And you get all over it, get the fluid would get all over me and all over my clothes.
Oh
It
my
just it's a mess,
goodness.
okay?
Yeah.
And I'm the one that has to change this thing out, okay?
That is terrible. They didn't have like the nurse because of the COVID, nobody
Well,
was
that was
able
part
to
of it.
come.
And then, I was out of the hospital, and they're like, well, come in once every, we'll come in once a month, and we'll
Oh,
evaluate if we
wow.
can take it out or not.
So you have to learn how to be nurse to yourself.
I mean, I used to have to change my wound, my incisions.
Oh
I
my
couldn't do the
goodness.
back thing. Obviously, I couldn't do my back one because I had the lung
Oh.
surgery back here. They went in back here. But like with the hip and everything, I had to change my bandages. I mean, thank God I could, Thank
Yes.
God it was in an area where it was right here by my hip and I actually could manage it and do it. But the thing was, this is the bittersweet bit about the pancreas surgery, okay? So when they told me the results, they did a big spin on me. They congratulated me that I didn't have cancer. And I'm like, okay. But so, well, that's good. I'm relieved that it wasn't cancer because now I'm well over, I'm better than this 5% thing, right?
Okay.
But they had to take out my spleen. That, sometimes the spleen is so closely attached that they had to take that out. And it ended up after some discussion with them that it was a misdiagnosis for a blood clot. So
No.
I had a blood clot on my pancreas. So they cut my pancreas in half and removed my spleen for a blood clot. And I asked them, how could you not
Oh,
decipher that that was
that's
not a tumor?
crazy. Oh my
I mean, we've all
gosh.
seen enough
Yeah.
surgeries on TV to tell what a blood clot looks like and
Oh
what
my
something else
gosh.
looks like, right?
That's misdiagnosed and a half.
I mean, here's the
Oh my
thing.
gosh.
Here's the
So,
thing.
like,
No consequences, okay? It's public health care. They were actually arrogant in
that's terrible.
their delivery to me about like kind of in this way of like we're untouchable, whatever. It
Oh
was an
my God.
accident. We don't care. You don't have cancer. Congratulations. Get out is how I felt, right? Okay.
I'm so sorry that it happened to you, but I bet like lots of us have those kind of stories
Oh,
with misdiagnosing with wrong medications and all that stuff. I have my own stories. I don't know. I'm not
Oh,
gonna get into it too, but I actually experienced the same thing that the doctor who prescribed me meds that almost killed me was actually his license was revoked because of somebody else because I didn't even complain. But I thought to myself, if they took his license, that means how many people like actually got harmed to get to the point. But the craziest part that my husband said that his license gonna be like be back in a year or so. So it was really no consequences. And
That's
that's
what
what he say, it's like practicing the healthcare or whatever.
Yeah,
And you know
practicing
what?
medicine.
And you know what, guys? It's not be like because we're trying to like, I don't know, who won all the doctors and all this stuff. This is facts and this is happening, you know, because there are lots of good doctors who make it amazing decisions, like who knows how to have like those bedside manners, you know. We just sharing our stories and our experience. So don't be angry. And yeah, we have like all the different stuff that happened to us and good and bad. Because like Trent was talking about the doctor with the leg, and he said he was fantastic and did amazing job. So that just personalized experience with different stuff, but it happening. How terrible is that to actually lose the organs that could work in other, I don't know, till the rest of your life, and could be treated differently. That's what the anger and frustration about.
Absolutely.
And no consequences, because we need justice and resolution. And that's like terrible part that you cannot do anything about it. But then like next part, what about the lung?
Okay, so, right. So then we had the lung surgery, and the surgery went fine. The next day when they were inspecting the incision, that was infected.
Oh my God.
So now I have an infected lung and the hip is still infected. This is about a year later. Okay. And I had decided with the hip, I'm like, these guys, no more chances. I'm done with them. No more surgeries. No more anything. I know that probably one day I'm going to have to go back to the States. Mm-hmm. And when I do, I'll deal with the leg then. I'm done with these guys. They've had enough chances. Well, the orthopedic knew that I was in the hospital with the lung thing. No visitors, no support. This is during COVID. No one's around. I'm all alone. I'm still on narcotics. And about a day or two later, a few days later, the orthopedic comes in and he says, look, that wire that you have, that's causing the infection. We're taking it out.
Oh my goodness. After all these months, they like
after a year.
Get out a year after a year, they're like, oh, that's
almost a year.
What it is.
Yeah.
Oh.
So I was dragging this infected leg around shorter than the other. And let me give you an idea how much shorter. So this was the shoe that I was wearing. So you get an idea kind of, you know, like that is about, you know, close to an inch or so. Okay. Is where I was at.
Wow.
And so,
But not only like infected leg, it's probably your emotions was down, like, and dealing with this stuff. Like, it's so much overwhelm and the stress and the pain and the fear. And then it's already escalating to anger and resentment and doctor like sucks and all this stuff. Man, that was like probably like really rock bottom for you in the way you felt, and especially COVID being alone. Man, that's terrible. I'm so sorry that happened to you.
It gets better in a much worse way.
Oh, okay. I want to hear that.
So I had the surgery, and the head orthopedic that I had the impression was doing the surgery didn't do the surgery. A junior surgeon did the surgery.
Oh my goodness.
I didn't realize this. Okay. And so the result of the surgery was that he damaged my nerves in my bladder. So I have that thing where you know, I had this for a long, several years where I have to frequently go to the bathroom. I think I need to go to the bathroom, think about, you know, trying to get up in the middle of the night on crutches, you know, with this leg, trying to get to the bathroom before you pee on yourself. So there's that. And then what happened was, this is after this has sealed up. This is, this is what is called, now this is after this healed up, which is basically a miracle that my incision healed up, because it was all over again. This is what they call a surgical hernia. That is actually a bit of my intestines.
That is terrible.
Yeah, that's my small intestines. And so that was a result of the surgery. Here's the thing. It didn't get the infection. Okay. That wasn't the infection. And so over time, what the result was, let me put both of these up. Boy, I'm upside down today.
Okay.
So you can see, right, this one. Now look here. Now, can you tell that the hip bone, the leg bone was here, and now it's up here?
Okay.
Because there's nothing to hold it down. Okay. So that's what happened over time, which resulted in my shoe going from this to this.
Wow.
Over 4 inches. Okay.
I honestly, like, I'm so surprised that you're still alive. It sounds like
I'm not supposed to be. I'm not supposed to be
experimenting on you and practicing on you,
oh,
and
yeah.
you're still living.
Absolutely.
And you're still talking, and you still a cool guy to hanging out for an hour on a podcast. And the way you're speaking about this, although like I know there's like and have the emotions behind, you still, I don't feel any hate from you. I don't feel like any like really like you just took what the cards that dealt for you and just move forward. Actually, we were talking about this a little bit in the beginning that you sent me a picture of you and it says faith over fear. And I thought, wow, that's really cool, because honestly, just believe that you're gonna overcome, just like your father told you that you will and back you up. And you still, every time that I'm talking to you, you speak with kindness to people. So it didn't broke you and your spirit as a human being, as that identity that you had before all this mess start happening. It's still there. You're still kind, you're still laughing, you still want to support people who actually went through it. And look, all this stuff that you participating on now, it's blowing me away, because I'm like, wow, this is amazing outcome, that no matter what happened to you, you are still you with the same heart. And still, because lots of people might be, I don't say like lots of people, I don't want to say that, but in general, this kind of situation can make us a victor or victim. Because we can concentrate on stuff that happened to us and be in bondage forever. Although like our stitches can heal, our emotions can feel, our trauma can feel, but we still can be stuck in those really bad moments of the past and do not progress and do not learn and grow and actually don't benefit to yourself or to anyone or people around us. So I really want to congratulate you. I don't know if it's congratulation, it's the right word, but I cannot find. I'm so proud that you're sticking to your identity to being a good man rather than to be a victim and hate on the world, because it happens, nothing we can do about it anymore. But how we behave afterward, it's very important. So I actually had really joint privilege to talk to you today. And is there anything else like you want to add? Because was that three times or this is three times?
Well, so I got out of the hospital, okay? And that 2 weeks turned into 2.5 months. And when they released me, they didn't give me any medication, okay? And I didn't really think about it. And so in New Zealand,
you were on those narcotics as a painkillers.
Yeah, I was on methadone.
Okay.
Methadone.
Just want to clear that up.
Yeah. The methadone, most people know methadone is a tool that's used to help people get off heroin or opiate addiction, right? Mm-hmm. In New Zealand, they use it for pain management. Very effective. The problem is it's highly addictive. Mm-hmm. And it takes a long time to get off of it. Well, I was still on it. And I didn't think about it because they kind of actually rushed me out of the hospital.
Oh, my goodness.
Basically, they told me, the doctor came in and said, someone needs this bed more than you do, and you're leaving tomorrow. I had an open incision on my lung. I had an open incision on my leg. I had a tube out of my arm for antibiotics. And I had a vacuum thing that was on my leg that I had to wear around my neck with a machine, you know,
It's terrible that they kick you out. Who needs more than you do? That's awful.
Unbelievable. Oh. And so, they packed me up and I left the next day. The nurse packed all my stuff up, took me downstairs in a wheelchair, put me in a taxi. They paid for it and sent me home.
So and I now thought, you okay, have well, no drugs. How long it took you to understand that you need your next
dose? About 3 days,
mm-hmm.
2 to 3 days. And I didn't realize it. And I started getting angry and I was upset and my emotions were crazy. And I
Probably
was in,
sweating too,
oh
like
yeah,
no
it's, I was,
appetite, like all that stuff that
it was everything. It was there. And I'm like, what is going on with me? I'm going crazy.
withdrawals.
I'm sitting, yeah, that's exactly what it was. I'm sitting in my office with my door closed, in my underwear, sweating over my computer, trying to work. And I'm like, I'm having withdrawal. So I get in touch with the doctor, I get in touch with the hospital. The hospital's not going to take me back in because they just released me. My GP, so I'm in this weird area where my GP doesn't want to prescribe me methadone. You can't find it anywhere at a pharmacy, okay? And then I did find it, and I could only get, I'm talking like two or three drops, enough to just like get me through a day or two. And then I had to go through this thing every like
Oh
three
my
times a week,
gosh.
right? Go into the pharmacy. And I'll tell you what, I got so fed up with it. What I did was I just decided, you know what, I can't deal with this. When I go to the pharmacy, they would treat me like I was a drug addict. And I'm like, I've had it. This is enough. I don't deserve this. And I got frustrated. And I said, you know what? I'm not doing anything. So I just decided I was going to live with it, live with the
Wow.
symptoms. The physical symptoms, you know, they went after a couple of weeks, right? But a couple of weeks, but the mental thing, I was, su it made me suicidal.
Oh my
I'm talking
goodness.
like I was close to doing it, thinking about doing it, planning it, you know, getting down to it. And I was like, you know what? I better start talking to a counselor, right?
That is good.
And so I knew it was the drugs. I knew it was the drugs. And here's the thing. I couldn't go, I wasn't going to go through with it. I knew I couldn't do that to myself. I couldn't do that to my family. Let me tell you why. Because about probably about 6 months before, as well, before I had got diagnosed with cancer, a really good friend of mine that owned the local restaurant, kind of like you would think of, kind of like a Cheers, right? With the show Cheers, where everybody's, you know, friends and everybody's got their own place to sit. This was one of my good friends, and he went bankrupt. No one knew. And the next day, he went to the other side of town, out in the woods, and he hung himself.
Wow.
And the pain that that caused, I just couldn't. I couldn't do that to my family.
Well,
And
sometimes
so,
when we get into those situations, we have this lie that it's easier way out.
oh
But
yeah.
it's very selfish too, because people around gonna be very hurt. And not only it's selfish, it's not solved the problem too. You know, people think that it's easier, but honestly, I hope and pray you guys, like if you right now thinking about that it's easy way out, that you wouldn't be here to deal or with physical or emotional pain or with loss, you know, loss of loved ones or the finances or homes or parents, whatever it is, if you're at the end of the rope, please, please, please seek help, because it's not the solution you think it is, but it's lie. Please find someone, talk to someone. This is not the end. It could be not the end for you. Just please speak up.
The thing for me was, you know, in that situation, I felt responsible. I felt responsibility to my friends and my family that I could not do that to them. Even though I didn't love, I didn't care about myself. You know, I didn't care if I lived or died at that point. I really didn't. You can't, you have some, you have responsibilities to others. And that is one of the things that kept me from doing that, you know, is I just, I can't do that. I can't do that to the people I love. Even though I don't care about myself, they care about me and I can't do that. That was one of the things that really, you know, and then I
That
know
saved you.
it
That's
did. And
crazy.
then, the reminder of a close friend that had recently done that. And the difference between my friend that had died of cancer and then my friend that had committed suicide, the difference in the pain, it's much worse. I can't
Why
fully
do you
describe
think
it.
that like it's much worse? It's because the cancer is inevitable and this one chosen? Or why? Why do you think that people didn't have a closure? Or what would you say the pain was different in one sense? I don't know why I'm thinking about it. I just want to
Yeah,
little bit
I
more.
think, I think we naturally have a feeling of what could I have done to help him? I feel like there's some regret there, and and there's definitely some remorse, and then it's also the thing that you didn't let the natural universe take its course. You don't know, we'll never know. We'll never know what could have happened, what he could have done. And he forced destiny. And I'm more of a person that likes to try to, be a part of the destiny. I don't want to, I don't want to force something like that. And,
Yeah, and you're definitely not giving in to death. That's for sure. We already heard that you keep fighting and you say no to everything that comes your way
That's
because
right.
your strive for living and overcoming is so strong.
That's it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I got through all that. I got through all that, the lung healed up and the leg, the leg, it was healing up. Still infected though, right? And I'm back at work. I'm back at work. When I can get to work, I'm at work,
Oh my goodness.
And so I'm doing my thing, my next scan. No. This time you really do have pancreas cancer. No, you really do. And here's the thing. Same surgeon, same team, because he's the best surgeon in the country. Okay.
I'll be
I
didn't
didn't.
go with him. I would not risk him with my body. I'm
I
like,
didn't.
you just took my organs
Yeah.
out. I'm not doing this again.
You can imagine. So this time I said, look, I gotta have a biopsy. Because last time you wouldn't let me have one and it was a misdiagnosis. So this time I have to have one. And I wanted to do, I said, look, I will not do chemotherapy. Okay. I will only do radiation. We're not going to cut it out. Okay. You're done with the knife, right? You can recommend me for radiation. That is it. Okay. And so, because he wanted to cut it out, he wanted to remove it. And I just, so me and him over several months, right? So, you book an appointment. You don't, I mean, this is public, right? You don't get an appointment or you don't get an appointment or a test run or a scan or something. It takes a month to a couple
Yes.
months, right? Plus we're dealing with COVID. Okay.
Wow.
So this goes on for 6 months, back and forth. Finally, I get a biopsy. It's cancerous. Okay. Now, when we found it, okay, I had gotten to the point where I was like, I can't read the images, but send me the reports. I want the report of everything every time you guys do something. I read the reports, okay,
Okay.
and I can figure it out. So when they found it, it was this big. That's the size of two nickels, okay, on its side. By the time we got to where we had the biopsy done, this big.
Wow.
Okay. I'm like, time is running out. I cannot wait any longer. So I went to a couple of private physicians. Okay. One of them was a pancreas guy. One of them was a radiation guy. One of them.
You learn to ask second opinion,
I
and
just
that's
said, you
what
know what? I
happens
just can't
from
wait
bad
anymore.
experience.
I'm going to die. I'm going to die if I don't. So I went to the radio. So I went to the pancreas guy. Of course, he referred me on to the radiology guy and the oncology guy, but his thing was, you're gonna die from this. This is gonna kill you. Okay. I had already been told several times by like by my orthopedic that, if that this was gonna get me and I'd already, I was already in that state. If I, so I went to this radiation doctor and he said, look, your latest report says that this size tumor is growing into your stomach and we won't do radiation.
Wow.
Even though my other public doctor was like, oh yeah, I'll recommend you, da 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 da. Okay. And And he said, look, we can't do radiation because we could burn a hole into you, into your stomach lining, and we don't know, you could bleed to death and we wouldn't know internally.
Yeah.
No signs. And we won't do surgery because we have to cut into your stomach and we may not be able to stop the
They
bleeding.
just don't want to take a risk and
No
the
risk.
liability that it's happened one way or another. You don't have any good chances to survive, so they're not taking it.
You got it. And here's the other thing, right? When the government, this is a government-run thing, okay? I became a number. I became someone that they weren't going to spend any more money on because there was no reason, okay? So at this point, I decided I need to go home. I had literally been given, I went to this private oncologist. He gave me a year. He gave me a year to live. And I said, okay, I'm going home to be with my parents for the last year I have.
You mean go home
As
in
in,
the
as in, as
US?
in leave from New Zealand and come back
Yes.
to the
I
United
just want
States
to
to live.
clarify that, not
Sure.
go home from the hospital. Sorry, not
Sure.
from
Yeah.
the hospital, from the doctors, but actually go back home to be with your family in US from New Zealand. Okay.
And I on the phone one day with my parents while I was still in New Zealand, I just could hear the hopelessness in their voice and the helplessness that they finally had heard. Because my parents were, or they're positive, they're optimistic, they're good Christians,
Yeah.
they're supportive,
First
they're
time, second time, but on the third time, it's take a toll.
it's gonna get you, right? And I'd kind of given up too. I'd been through all the thing with the methadone in my head, and I just, I don't care anymore. And I decided on the phone that day, I said, you know what? It's not fair. I'm gonna fight this. I know. Here's the deal. Here's the deal. I don't care if I have less than a 5% chance. All I need is a chance. That's all you need. If you have a chance, you can do it, right? I don't care about percentages. I don't care about statistics. It doesn't bother me. Okay. I get it. And I'm a numbers guy and I get caught up and I, business and money and, accounting and everything. But I don't care. I got a chance. So I decided at that point, I'm going to fight this thing. So I went back to the States, right? I came back and I came to a local doctor. I said, you know what? I remember my parents being in New Zealand in hotels every night, having to travel, eating out, all that stuff. It's a lot of extra work and effort and, stress and everything. Let's start at home. So I went to a local clinic here. And the guy said, look, man, he said, we got great machinery here. Those things you're worried about, their concerns, there are possibilities that those things could happen. We're going to monitor you closely. But let me tell you something. By this time, this big, okay, the tumor is from here to here to this big now,
Wow.
okay?
I
Seven
love that you're
months.
doing all these visuals because now
Seven
it's like
months.
mind blowing to see that. And actually, guys, like for those of you who are gonna listen this on a podcast and it's just the audio. So first, like he had like two nickels and there is small tennis ball and then it's baseball, softball
Softball,
size ball. So you can imagine, you guys, how it's getting bigger and bigger fast.
I mean, yeah, in 7 months, in 7 months, it grew from nothing to
Yeah.
that big, right? I mean,
Wow.
it was going to take over. My stomach hurt all the time. I couldn't eat. I was on smoothies. I was losing weight. I could look in the mirror. I had no color. I was
My
dying. There's
gosh,
no doubt. I
terrible.
could tell. So we decided, the doctor said, look, your choices are, we'll do radiation. I think we can get it. Or if we don't, this is going to kill you. Okay, let's do radiation.
I knew that that's what you're gonna
That's
choose.
easy. No problem.
Yeah.
So we did the radiation and we had to wait 3 months and we got it, baby. We nailed it.
Yay. That's
And so,
awesome.
yeah.
So tell
So I
us, like,
still,
where are you now? It's now
yeah.
like you are cancer free, like all of it is gone. So tell us
Yes. Right.
the success
So,
stories.
yeah, exactly. So that's where things started to really turn around with actual visual results, right? And then the next thing was the hip, because I wanted to get a hip implant somehow. But the thing was, you saw that there's really nowhere to bolt anything to put a hip implant in. That's what every doctor told me. I was going to doctors all over the country, talking to doctors everywhere, researching. All had the same answer. There's infection in your hip. We won't operate. If we could, we can't, because there's nothing to put a implant to. Okay. So we got the cancer thing kind of done. Then I went to a doctor here that specializes in infections and stuff. Got on some antibiotics for 3 months, 2 hours every day, and we got the infection. So the next thing is, what are we going to do? What are we going to do about this? Because I've been on crutches for like 4.5, 5 years now. I've been on crutches longer than most people go to college, okay? To give you an idea. So my goal is cancer free, remove the infection, let's get a hip implant. I want to get off the crutches, right? Those are my three things.
So how did it happen?
Yep. So I found a doctor at Mayo Clinic, and I've gone through. It's a three-part surgery to get the length back, but I am 2 months, 2 months after, 2 months in recovery from the actual hip implant that they just did. Okay. And to give you an idea, this is what it looks like. Okay. That is all metal.
And
There's seven
honestly,
or eight
guys, like
screws.
another thing for you guys who don't see this, that's literally look like they created body part out of metal. And
They
it looks
did.
like you are now gonna be unstoppable. Are you walking now without crutches?
Well, I have 6 months no weight bearing.
Okay,
Okay.
so it's
We
gonna take some
this is
time.
there's about seven or eight screws, and there's three rods. There's procedures that have been done that have never been done before. This is the largest, most complex hip implant ever done. So I have to wait until the bone grows into all the metal, okay, and
So
everything.
there you go, guys. Honestly, if you think this is impossible, as long as like you don't give up until this is something that you cannot do anything about happens, like death. Definitely, you cannot do anything about it. But until that happens, you just persevere. And sometimes it's going to be terrible. Sometimes it's going to feel lonely and painful. But we have an amazing ability to figure things out if we persevere. So there are always way out if you start looking and just say, like Trent, I don't want to give up. Okay, I'm still doing it. I'm not gonna die. I'm not gonna roll over and wait for death. I'm gonna be proactive. And this is so awesome. That was amazing conversation. And we are done with our time, but I still want you to tell us where people can find you, learn more about you and your story. And I hope and pray the people connect with you through whatever social media that I'm gonna post in my show notes, so they will talk to you and share their stories or tell you how amazing you are and how inspiring your story is. And I hope and pray this has helped someone today. Guys, please
Absolutely.
listen to this. Or if you know someone, I keep like doing this clapping because I'm just so excited because we all have or know someone that need this encouragement and hope. So please share this video, share all the information about Trent, ask him more questions. Maybe you need to know more information that for your personal cases, like ask him. He looks like a guy who open and willing to help. So there you
Absolutely.
go. Tell us a little bit where we can find you
Sure,
and
sure.
about your work.
Well, you know, I do coaching, and I use the same kind of scenario to help people overcome obstacles and reach goals the same way that I've done. I use the same kind of formula. So I do a bit of coaching, and I do speaking as well. And if anybody'd like me to come onto their podcast, or you know, a speaking stage speaking or anything, I'm up for any of that stuff. You can find me at TrentBrock@yahoo.com, and my Facebook is Trent Brock, and my picture looks like a guy with his hands over his head doing the victory, like he just won the game. So that's me. And then my Instagram is Trent B. Brock. And so it's the same thing, you know, give me a shout out. I'd love to talk to you. If I can help you, I will. It, you know, or you want to talk, you want to tell me a story, you've had cancer, you've had an obstacle. You know, I just really and truly, I used to think, and it was popcorn was my calling and my job, but now my job is really to tell my story and to help people and provide hope and help and to let people know that, you know, if you got a chance, that's all you need.
That's awesomeness. And before I let you go, I would like to ask you my signature question. What does love and to be loved means to you?
To me specifically?
Yes.
Yeah, what does love and to be loved? Well, I think you have to be very open and be open to you need to be able to love yourself. And if you can't do that, you really can't love others. And so I think that's a really big part of it. And if you don't think you love yourself, you need to figure out why. And you may need to go talk to somebody about that. But I think that's the key to love and being loved is you need to first be able to love yourself and accept yourself. And then you can also do that with others.
That's amazing. Thank you so much, Trent, for being our guest today. Oh my goodness, you provide so much insight, amazing story of overcoming. And our special guest is Trent Brock. And Trent is 3 times cancer overcomer, and he was given literally 1 year to live, and now officially 2 years
Two
cancer
years. Two
free.
years cancer-free.
That's
Yeah.
awesome.
You can do
Congratulations.
it. You
And
can do it too. It's possible.
absolutely.
It's possible.
An amazing, amazing story. And again, guys, don't hesitate to reach out to Trent. And I will post everything that was mentioned in this episode in show notes. And I'm actually gonna post the link to our website for our book as well. There you can read about Trent as well, his bio, and some extra information that you can look up. And stay tuned for another edition of Love and Beloved. And we will meet with another writer who has written for Breaking the Silence, Voices of Survivor Collection. And thank you so much for listening. And thank you, Trent. I'm really grateful for you and your time.
My pleasure. Thank you very much, Lena.
Bye, guys.
See ya.
And remember, you are never alone. You are loved. You are God's treasure, precious and priceless to Him.
Thank you for listening to Love and Beloved. If you have any questions about what you heard today, visit lovedandbeloved.com. It's love and the letter B with no E, loved.com. Please be sure to subscribe, rate, and share the show. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you. Thank you for your support. If you'd like to connect, we would love to hear from you. So send a quick note to lenasabula@gmail.com. Stay healthy, stay safe, love and be loved.